today I thought to read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. The same principles are there in the Bhagavad Gita. To begin, we will recite the verse responsively. Every verse in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is considered a mantra, although generally we don't chant one mantra from the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam again and again, as we do the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But still, each verse is a mantra, and there is a benefit to reciting it, even independent of the meaning. Of course, with any mantra, the value of the recitation or repetition is increased by understanding the meaning. But even without understanding the meaning, it has a powerful effect. So, and to begin with, we recite another mantra for invocation. It's actually quite ancient. I mean, they're all ancient, and has been recited historically by sages and saintly persons for thousands of years. So we will begin with that. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 18. I will recite each word individually, and you can repeat. Tasya.
Tasya.
Eva.
Eva.
Heto.
Heto.
Prayateta.
Prayateta.
Kovida.
Kovida.
Na.
Na.
Labhyate.
Labhyate.
Yat.
Yat.
Brahmatam.
Brahmatam.
Upari.
Upari.
Adha.
Adha.
Tat.
Tat.
Labhyate.
Labhyate.
Dukhavat.
Dukhavat.
Anyata.
Anyata.
Sukham.
Sukham.
Kalena.
Kalena.
Sarvatra.
Sarvatra.
Gabira.
Gabira.
Ramhasa.
Ramhasa.
This might not be so easy, but we'll go through it once or twice. Tasyai vaheto prayate to kovido.
Tasyai vaheto prayate to kovido.
Na labhyate yad brahmatam uparyada.
Na labhyate yad brahmatam uparyada.
Ta labhyate dukavad anyata sukham.
Ta labhyate dukavad anyata sukham.
Kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa.
Kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa.
Tasyai vaheto prayate tako vido.
Tasyai vaheto prayate tako vido.
Na labhyate yad pramatam upariyada.
Na labhyate yad pramatam upariyada.
Ta labhyate dukha vad anyata sukham.
Ta labhyate dukha vad anyata sukham.
Kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa.
Kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa.
Tasya.
Tasya.
For that purpose.
For that purpose.
Eva,
Eva,
only,
only,
heto,
heto,
reason,
reason,
prayateta,
prayateta,
should endeavor,
should endeavor,
kovida,
kovida,
one who is philosophically inclined,
one who is philosophically inclined,
na,
na,
not,
not,
labhyate,
labhyate,
is not obtained,
is not obtained,
yet,
yet,
what,
what,
brahmatam,
brahmatam,
wandering,
wandering,
upari,
upari,
adha,
adha,
from top to bottom,
from top to bottom,
tat,
tat,
that,
that,
labhyate,
labhyate,
can be obtained,
can be obtained,
dukavat,
dukavat,
like the miseries,
like the miseries,
anyata,
anyata,
as a result of previous work,
as a result of previous work,
sukham,
sukham,
sense enjoyment,
sense enjoyment,
kalena,
kalena,
in due course of time,
in due course of time,
sarvatra,
sarvatra,
everywhere,
everywhere,
gabhira,
gabhira,
subtle,
subtle,
ramhasa,
ramhasa,
progress,
progress.
Now we need to make more room here. We can. We definitely can. Yes. Some, yes. Especially the regular participants in the Thursday program.
Yes. The closer you get to Maharaj, it's better for you.
Guru Bhakti, do you see anyone that needs to be encouraged to come forward?
Maybe we can take the chair out. Yeah. So the chair is not in the way.
So you all have the verse and purport in front of you. Now we will read the translation of the verse. Persons who are actually intelligent. That's very good. But let me read it through once straight, and then we'll do it phrase by phrase. Persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, Patala. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in the course of time, just as in the course of time we obtain miseries, even though we do not desire them. So now we can repeat. Persons who are actually intelligent.
Persons who are actually intelligent.
And philosophically inclined.
And philosophically inclined.
Should endeavor only. For that purposeful end.
For that purposeful end.
Which is not obtainable. Even by wandering from the topmost planet.
Even by wandering from the topmost planet.
Brahmaloka. Down to the lowest planet.
Down to the lowest planet.
Patala.
Patala.
As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment.
As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment.
Is concerned.
It can be obtained automatically.
In course of time. Just as in course of time,
we obtain miseries,
even though we do not desire them. So I will leave the purport to you to read on your own, but we will cover the points in the verse and the purport in the discussion. Now, there are many important words in the verse, and implied in the verse is the idea of karma. Karma means literally action, which brings some reaction. There are three words, actually, karma, vikarma, and akarma. Vikarma means action which is against the Vedic injunctions or against natural laws. Karma means activities that are within the Vedic injunctions or natural laws. And akarma means transcendental activities that do not bring any reaction. The reaction to vikarma is material suffering. And the result of karma, or prescribed duties, according to Vedic injunctions, is material happiness. But as long as we take birth in the material world, we have to suffer. We're in the world of duality, and there always will be pleasure and pain, happiness and distress. We cannot avoid it. And whether by mechanical arrangement or by pious activities or by yogic practice you're able to go to a higher planet, even there, even on the very highest planet in the material universe, there will be the same duality of happiness and distress. And on the lowest planet, there will be happiness and distress. Even in on the Earth, there are places that are relatively more opulent than places that are relatively less opulent. Rightly or wrongly, many people from Mexico, this is just an example, they think that they will enjoy a better life in America. So they try to cross the border from Mexico to America. And in a relative sense, there may be some difference, although every place has its advantages and disadvantages. But the basic is the same. The basic dualities are the same. The basic miseries of repeated birth, disease, old age, and death are the same. It doesn't matter how rich or poor you are, you're going to get disease, you're going to grow old, and you're going to die. It doesn't matter if you're a prince or a pauper. And that relativity, just like there's a relativity, I'm giving that example, say, of Mexico and the United States, that relativity exists on the cosmic level. Some planets are relatively more opulent. They have a relatively higher standard of living, and some have a relatively lower standard. The Earth planet is considered to be in the middle range, but slightly on the lower side of the middle range. But the Earth is actually a very good place for spiritual realization, because the material miseries can act as an impetus for a thoughtful person to progress in spiritual life. But if there's too much misery, then the person can't even function. So there's enough to remind us that the material world is not a happy place, and we should work towards another goal or destination. But it's not so miserable that we can't function and chant and learn. Now, this duality, specific duality of happiness and distress, which are mentioned in the verse sukha, which means happiness, and dukkha, which means distress. Ordinary people who are not intelligent or philosophically inclined, or they may be, but they have not had the good fortune of coming in touch with this knowledge through some devotee, they are generally preoccupied with trying to increase their happiness and reduce their distress. This is the general endeavor of ordinary people, how to increase their happiness and how to reduce their distress. Karmis. We discussed karma, so they are karmis. They are absorbed in that action and reaction. They want to do some action that they feel will bring some happiness or counteract some distress. And then there are gyanis, there's mental speculators, and they want to get released from this duality, but in a negative way. They see that activity in the material world brings distress, So they want to stop activity. They perceive that individuality, being a person, you suffer in the material world. So they want to give up being persons. They want to merge into some impersonal light and give up their individual identities. And they have many examples, just like a drop of water merges into the ocean and loses its individual identity. But that is from the perspective of the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, or those who are more advanced on the spiritual path. That is negative. It's negating the miseries of material existence, but there is no positive experience of transcendental bliss. They have no idea of the transcendental bliss that can be experienced in relation to Krishna, to the personality of Godhead. So, now, this verse makes a very profound statement, which is that nobody wants distress. Nobody goes to the church or the temple or the yoga society or the massage therapist to get more distress. People are trying to avoid distress and increase happiness. But the distress comes without anyone making any endeavor for it, without praying for it or working for it. It comes as a result of our karma or destiny. What is our destiny? Our destiny is actually the result of our past activities. That word is mentioned in this verse, our previous activities. So, just as our distress comes without our making any endeavor, similarly, our happiness will also come without our making any endeavor, according to what is destined to us on the basis of our past activities. I will give some examples. Well, in India, there's a saying. It's a play on words, but the saying is that anyone who goes to Calcutta, his forehead will go with him. Now, what is the meaning? Previously, Calcutta was the most opulent city in India. In fact, it was considered the jewel on the crown of the British Empire. So people had the idea, if I go to Calcutta, I will enjoy a better life. I will become happier. Like now, you know, people come to America, not just from Mexico, from India, from everywhere, thinking they'll enjoy a better life here. So that was the position of Calcutta, or the reputation of Calcutta. Now, forehead, the word, our forehead has lines on it. And just like we believe that, you know, one's destiny is written on one's palm. In India, it is believed that one's destiny is also written on one's forehead. And you can't change the lines on your palm or on your forehead. So that saying that even if you go to Calcutta, your forehead will go with you, means your destiny will go with you. You can't escape it. And that is the truth. That is the truth. Whatever destiny whatever happiness or distress you're destined to enjoy as a result of your past activities will come to you no matter what. And the same principle is there in other literatures, because these are eternal principles. Of course, they're expounded upon very scientifically and elaborately in the Vedic scriptures, but these are common principles, universal laws or truths. So there's one story from Persian literature about a servant of a very wealthy man, and he sent his servant to the market to buy some things for the estate. And in the marketplace, the servant ran into, literally, death personified. And he became very upset, and he ran home to the master, and he told him, you know, I went to the marketplace in Baghdad, and death personified jostled me and looked at me very menacingly, and, you know, I ran away and I came back here, and you know, death is after me, so I'm going to Samara. Another place called Samara. So then the master himself went to the marketplace, and he also saw death personified there. And he said, what did you do with my servant? You know, he said, you jostled him and you looked at him in a very menacing way. And death replied, I didn't look at him in a menacing way. I was just surprised to see him in Baghdad because I have an appointment with him in Samara in the afternoon. So you get the idea. Whatever is destined to come to us will come. So, now, what do we do? Taking it for granted that we cannot escape our destiny, and that just as miseries come without our effort, happiness will also come. So what do we do? We're not going to sit idle. We're going to do something. So the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, but as we're discussing the present verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, says that we should not endeavor for things that can be obtained by wandering in this universe from the highest planet to the lowest. In other words, material happiness and sense gratification. But we should endeavor for something that is permanent. And what is that? That is Krishna and service to Krishna. That is how we should focus our time and energy. The other endeavor will not bring any result. Now, in Vedic civilization, people have different positions in society, and according to their positions, they have different duties. So, most people marry and want to have children, which is completely normal and natural. So they have their duties. And the duty of the father or the parents is to provide for the family and raise the children. So that's their duty. And so they, as a matter of duty, they work. But if they think that by working they can become more happy, or with their money they can avoid misery, they are mistaken. That is the wrong mentality with which to work. We work as a matter of duty, but we know that whatever is destined to come to us will come. You read The Journey Home? Someone read the book called The Journey Home? Yes. Yes. So in there is a story. His Holiness Radhanath Swami went to spend some time with his friend Ramesh Baba, who was living on a hill in Varshana. And in those days, the Vrindavan area was not as built up as it is now. And so there's a lot of like jungle woods, and it was rumored, or the news had spread, let's say, not rumored, the news had spread that there was a tiger on the prowl. So, as Radhanath Swami describes it, he was a little anxious because the tiger could come and attack them, and he devoured them. And so he said to Ramesh Baba, are we going to do anything about the tiger? And Ramesh Baba said, yes, I have my stick right here. So Radhanath Swami said, that stick, what is that stick going to do if a tiger attacks? And Ramesh Baba replied, actually, it is only God who can protect us. You know, and there's a saying, Krishna Mare Rakhe Ke, Krishna Rakhe Mare Ke, that if Krishna wants to protect you, who can kill you? And if Krishna wants to kill you, who can protect you? So he said, it depends on Krishna. If only Krishna will protect us. And then Radhanath Swami said, well, then what's the use of keeping the stick? And Ramesh Baba replied, well, it's our duty that we have to make some effort of our own, but we know that ultimately it depends on Krishna. So we make an effort, and but we know ultimately it depends on Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had one associate, or disciple, an associate, named Srivas Thakur. And Srivas Thakur was a householder, with all that that implies, wife, children, servants, animals. But he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is? Yeah. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually Krishna, who came to earth about 500 years ago to show us how to be devotees of Krishna. And the Bhagavad Gita, the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita is manmana bhava mad bhakto. Manmana means always think of Krishna. Mad bhakto, become Krishna's devotee. Madhyaji, worship Krishna. Mam namaskaru, offer obeisances to Krishna. That's the final conclusion. And but how to do that was not so clear. Krishna gave the instruction, and some people were able to understand it and follow it. But then Krishna thought, it will be better if I come again and play the part of a devotee. And then just by seeing my example, people will understand how to worship me, how to think of me, how to serve me. So this is so he's Krishna, but he is in the role of a devotee. And in fact, this picture, yes, the figure on the right is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the figure on the left is Nityananda Prabhu. And Nityananda Prabhu was Balaram. It's quite an intricate topic, but so that they're the original personality of Godhead and his first expansion. But they came to earth 500 years ago and played the parts of devotees to make it easy for us to understand how to be devotees. But on occasion, although he was playing the part of a devotee, on occasion he revealed his original identity as Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of God. So he said to Srivas Pandit, who was a Brahmin, that's another topic, but we can say like a priest, a scholar, teacher, priest. He noticed that he was not working. He said, Srivas, you are a married person. You have to work. And Srivas Pandit replied, no, my lord, it is not possible for me to work. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, well, if you're not going to work, you're not going to be able to maintain your family. So then you should take sannyas. You should enter the renounced order of life. And Srivas Pandit replied, my lord, I cannot do that either. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, well then, what are you going to do? And Srivas Thakur went, he clapped his hands three times. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what does that mean? And Srivast Thakur said that I have faith that Krishna will provide. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna promises that if someone surrenders to him and is fully absorbed in him, he will preserve what the person has and carry what the person lacks. So, if after 3 days Krishna does not provide, I will go to the Ganges River and drown myself. So then, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very pleased with his mood of surrender and faith in Krishna. And it was one of those rare occasions where he asserted himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he said, yes, I am indebted to you for your faithful devotional service, and it is my promise that neither you nor any of your family members nor any of your servants nor any of your household animals will ever know any want. You'll never have any lack in your lifetime. So that is the Lord's promise, and the Lord keeps his promise. But of course, one has to have that faith. It's not that the Lord will not provide if you don't have that faith. He'll provide anyway. He provides for the elephants in the jungle who eat 40 kilos a day. And he provides for the ants. So many little ants everywhere. There, if you leave out some sugar, they'll come. And they'll get their quota of 1 grain of sugar. So the Lord is providing anyway. Jesus Christ says the same thing in the Bible, that about the lilies of the field, are they not dressed by the... So the Lord is providing for everyone. So it's not that he won't provide for us if we don't have faith. But if we don't have faith, we will be in anxiety. And if we are in anxiety, we will not be able to properly focus on Krishna consciousness. So, we have given the example of Srivast Pandit to show what is possible. But it will not serve us well to try to imitate that degree of faith by our behavior if we don't have that internal development of faith. But by chanting and by reading the sacred texts, discussing the sacred texts, our faith will increase. And the theoretical knowledge will become realized knowledge. There's a difference. Like, you know, there's, well, you've probably already experienced many of our sweets, but say I tell you that tonight there is going to be peanut butter burfi, or, you know, there's going to be a very, a soft, creamy Indian sweet that's a combination of milk and peanuts and sugar. And so, okay, that's what a peanut butter burfi is, but you haven't experienced it, so that's theoretical knowledge. But then when you actually bite into one and chew it and taste it and swallow it, then you have realized knowledge. What is peanut butter burfi? So, in Krishna consciousness, realization is a gradual process. And as one continues to chant, as one continues to read and discuss and serve, then gradually one experiences more and more, and one's convictions become deeper and deeper. And then one is less disturbed by material upheavals. And there always are material upheavals. And the basic knowledge, it's implicit in this, but the basic principle is that we're not the body. We're the soul within the body. And whatever happens to the body, it doesn't actually touch the soul. The Bhagavad Gita says the soul cannot be cut, it cannot be burned, it cannot be withered. The soul cannot be touched. So whatever whatever happens to the body, it doesn't actually touch us, the soul. The body is just a machine. But if we identify with the body, then we take it very seriously, what happens to the body. Like someone will be driving his car and another vehicle will hit his car and he'll jump out and say, "You hit me! You hit me!" Well, actually, he didn't hit you, he hit your car, but like you identify with the car. Another example from India, but it's the same principle, that someone is driving a rickshaw, and he comes in your way, says, "Hey, rickshaw, get out of the way." Well, you're not talking to the rickshaw, you're talking to the owner of the rickshaw, the driver. "Hey, rickshaw, get out of the way." It's like you identify the vehicle, the machine, the vehicle with the person. Anyway, there are many examples, but that's the basic idea, that we cannot be affected. The soul cannot be affected. And as we chant and realize transcendental knowledge, we realize we're not the body, we're the soul within the body. And the real relationship of the soul is with the Supreme Soul, Krishna, with the spiritual world, not with the body and the material world. And that is where we should focus our efforts. And so you are definitely in the category of persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined. So given that this verse is addressed to you, you should take it to heart what you should do, and that is described in this verse. And we are here to help you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, this whole time I didn't even look at my watch, and I just glanced, and it's 8:45, which was our allotted time. I got what I was allotted. I didn't get more, I didn't get less. I got my quota. So, are there any questions or comments?
So, I have
have a question.
Yes.
Speaking of karma, according to the karma in your life, and also, I guess, in previous lives, it's going to play out in your life.
Yes.
But if you live your life to service to Krishna, is it that these things will be softened, like the blow will be softened if you are in service of Krishna, or they'll come the other way?
No, actually, that is a very good point, and what you said is true. Because in the next verse of the Bhagavad Gita, after that, Manmana Bhava Mat Bhakto, always think of me and become my devotee, he says, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Saranam Vraja, give up all varieties of religiousness and just surrender to me. Aham tvam sarva pape byo moksha isyami masuchaha. And I will free you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So that is a very important point, that we cannot do anything to escape our destiny. But if we surrender to Krishna, He can change our destiny, because He's all-powerful. He's above the law of karma. Destiny means karma. I'll give an example. You commit a crime. You are caught, you are sentenced, and you're punished. So according, we say, okay, now it's your destiny. You have to spend 30 years in prison. Destiny means because of something you did in the past, now as a reaction you're destined to serve 30 years in prison. But the governor or the president, he can pardon you. And then that karma, that destiny, that sentence is commuted. So Krishna has that power. And if you surrender to him, he does that. He does that. As you said, he lessens it. He may, for your purification, he may allow you to suffer some of the sinful reactions that are due to you, but not the full extent. But like a little token punishment to remind you that you should not engage in sinful activities, and you should get out of the material world. Yes.
What are the meanings of the mantra Hare Krishna?
Yes, that is a very good question. Now, Krishna, you know, is the original personality of Godhead, and he. It's described eko bahu sham, that the one becomes many, and the one expands himself into two initially, and the second is radha. You might have seen pictures of the divine couple, Radha and Krishna. We have in the temple the statue of Krishna, and at his side is Radha. So in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Krishna is calling Krishna, and Hare is calling Radha. Now, if someone calls your name, your natural response will be, yes, What do you want? So, all right, we're chanting the name of Radha and Krishna, and Ram is another name of Krishna. So, okay, yes, you're calling me. What do you want? So now, an intelligent and philosophically inclined person who is chanting, if Radha and Krishna say yes, what do you want? Are you going to say, I want elevation to a higher planet? No. Are you going to say, what to speak of that? I'm not going to say you want a new car or a new house or a new iPod or whatever. Actually, iPods are old-fashioned. iPad or iPhone. No. What are you going to ask for? You're going to ask for service. You're going to ask for service. So the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra ultimately is a prayer for service. O Radha, O Krishna, yes, what do you want? I want to serve you. Please accept me as your eternal servant and engage me in your service. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
What are the benefits of chanting Hare Krishna?
Well, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he inspired his disciples to write volumes and volumes of books on the science of Krishna, he really left only 8 verses of his own that contain the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And in the first of the 8 verses, he explains the benefits of chanting. And the verse begins, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. Cheta means like our mind, our consciousness, our mind. And Darpana means mirror. And Marjanam means cleans. So the chanting cleanses the mirror of the mind, or it purifies our consciousness. Just like if you have a mirror and it's covered with dust and you look in the mirror, you won't be able to see yourself. So because our consciousness is covered by material dirt or misconceptions or ignorance, we think we're the body. You know, man, woman, black, white, rich, poor, intelligent, whatever. And when the mirror of the mind is cleansed, we can see who we actually are, which is eternal spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna, eternal servant of Krishna. So, Cheto Darpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadevagni Nirvapanam. And this, the blazing fire of material existence is extinguished. This material, it's like a blazing fire. We're always uncomfortable because of that fire. But that's extinguished. There's a parallel verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. Brahma Bhuta means that when you realize that you're not the body, but you're Brahma, spirit, Brahma Bhuta, Prasanatma. Prasanatma means you become happy. Just like If you're told that you have some dread disease that's going to consume you and kill you within a short time, you're going to be full of anxiety. But then, if the report comes, actually we did further investigation, and it's nothing. You know, it's just going to go away on its own in a few days, and it's not going to harm you. You'll feel very happy. Feel very happy. So, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, when you realize you're not the body, but you're the soul, and that all these things that you're worried about happening to you are not going to touch you, you know, they might touch the body, but they're not going to touch you, you feel happy. Oh, that's not me. It's like a dream. You have a dream, and it's like a nightmare, and all these horrible things are happening, and then you wake up, and you're like still in anxiety, and then you're, oh, it's just a dream. Oh, phew, it's just a dream. It wasn't real. You feel happy. So, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, na sochati na kangshati. Then, there's no more hankering and lamenting. Everyone in the material world is hankering and lamenting. They're hankering to get what they don't have, and they're lamenting because they lost what they thought they had. So they're never happy. It's just always hankering and lamenting, hankering and lamenting. It's like a perpetual cycle, hankering and lamenting. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. Then he sees everyone equally, because he knows they're not the body. And spiritually, everyone is the same. Everyone is soul. It doesn't matter, you know. Okay, we say black, white, man, woman, rich, poor. But it's more than that. He sees the animals also have soul. The plants have soul. He sees them all. And that's why, one of the reasons why devotees or bhakta yogis are vegetarians, because they don't want to kill an animal. Of course, there are other reasons. Most of the plant-based food doesn't involve killing. You could take an apple from a tree, it doesn't kill the tree. Some things may involve killing, but that is also purified by offering the food to Krishna. That's a whole other topic. But sama sarveshu bhuteshu, basically seeing all living entities the same as spirit soul. And that means having compassion for them. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a disciple. Again, this is nothing that we could even begin to imagine imitating, but just to know that level of consciousness exists. He was a leper, and there were like worms that were like feeding off of the sores on his body. And if one of them fell down, he would pick it up and put it back. He had like so much feeling, you know, for their suffering. We're not able to do that, but at least we shouldn't, you know, for our sense gratification, we shouldn't make innocent animals go to the slaughterhouse. So, you know. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhakti labhate param. And at that stage, one achieves real bhakti. when one is really freed from the bodily concept. There's a beginning stage of bhakti, bhakti praya, where one is on the material platform but is chanting, is reading, is making progress. And that process, it was also hinted that that's also gradual, that we gradually become detached from the body and we gradually become more attached to Krishna, you know, more detached from the materialistic way of life, more attached to the spiritual life. So that is a gradual process. But once you begin, you are considered a devotee, a bhakta, and Krishna helps. Krishna helps from the very beginning stage. Yes? Yes, she's asked a very good question. Can I explain the difference between imitating and following the process, if there is a difference? Well, as Srila Prabhupada said, imitation of a good thing is also good. So, if you come to the temple, you don't really understand everything that's happening or why it's happening. But you see, okay, the curtains are opening and the devotees are bowing down, so I'll also bow down. So that's good. You know? The devotees are chanting, you don't really understand why. Okay, I'll also chant. So that's also good. Devotees are offering flowers, I will also offer a flower. So that's good. But the activities that the devotees perform in the temple are basically meant for everyone. It's a process that's meant for everyone, from a newcomer to an advanced devotee. Some of the things I mentioned are not for everyone. They're the behavior of very advanced devotees that we can't imitate, because if we were to try to imitate it, we would be disturbed. You know, like not working and, well, it depends. Of course, there's some pretty clever people who can figure out how to make money without working. But, or, you know, yes, we don't step on ants. I mean, that we don't. We avoid stepping on ants. But, you know, if there's an ant on the table and we come and it like runs away, we're not at that level where we pick it up and put it back on the table. But we won't step on it. You know, we won't squash it. So, yes, we. It's sort of a principle. As one advances, one should be intelligent enough to understand his own position and act accordingly. But if it comes to the temple program, you can imitate, because that's meant for everyone. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a disciple named Haridas Thakur, who was actually born in a Muslim family. And he used to chant 3 lakh names a day. Now most Like initiated devotees, they chant a minimum of 16 rounds, which might take about 2 hours, maybe 2.5, maybe 1.5. Haridas Thakur used to chant 8 times 16. It's like a lot. And so on one morning walk in Bombay, one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada, "Why have you prescribed 16 rounds?" And Prabhupada said, I haven't prescribed 16 rounds. 16 rounds minimum. If you can chant more, that's good. And so he said, well, okay, you prescribed 16 rounds minimum, but some devotees are making their own minimum number more than 16. And Prabhupada said, that's okay. You can make it more than 16, but not less than 16. And then he said, well, you know, how do we know if we're imitating Haridas Thakur? And Prabhupada said, you know, imitation is not always bad. You know, imitation of a good thing is good. So then someone said, but then what if there's service to do? And you say you can't do the service because you're chanting extra rounds. And then Prabhupada said, oh, well, if someone comes to you and says there's service and you refuse, I'm busy imitating Haridas Thakur, then that is bad. That is bad. Yes?
I had a question. I was wondering if you could speak of free will and what choice we actually do have.
Yes. Very good question. It's a very subtle question because we are conditioned by the material nature. And so we tend to act according to our conditioned tendencies. You know, some people, you know, you know, birds of a feather flock together. It's natural. There will be crows. And by nature, they will hunt around the garbage. And there will be swans, and by nature, they will swim in clear lakes. And so that is that's natural. Now, take another example. Say a tiger is carnivorous. It's not a sin for a tiger to eat flesh because by nature it's made to eat flesh. And elephants are vegetarian. It's not a virtue for an elephant to be vegetarian. By nature it's made to be vegetarian. So in the lower species there's really no pious and sinful activity. They all act according to their nature. It's only in the human form of life. And in the human form of life, because we have more highly developed consciousness, we have more responsibility, which means we have greater freedom. We don't have full freedom, but we have greater freedom than an animal. So we can decide, okay, I'm going to eat meat or I'm not. You know, that's our choice. And but generally, the choices within the relativity of material duality, they seem like choices, but in a sense they're not choices because it's just the same thing. It's just the same thing in a different form. Srila Prabhupada used this expression from India, wet stool and dry stool. So, wet stool, that's so icky. Oh, dry stool, that's nice. But stool is stool. So anything in the material world, we might say, oh, this is better and that's worse. But anything in the material world is the material world, and it's basically bad. So the real choice is whether we're going to surrender to Krishna or stay in Maya. You know, that's the real choice. Are we going to take up spiritual life or remain in all these varieties of material life, wandering in different species and different planetary systems? So that's where our real free will comes in, to surrender to Krishna or not. And that's the real turning point, that's the real critical junction in our sojourn, and that's the real proper use of our free will. All right, so thank you very much. Now we will have prasad. I gave a little hint of it. But it is... Did you have a question?
Yes. Small question. Why is mind compared to a mirror? You said Cheto Vartaman.
Oh, why is the mind compared to a mirror? Actually, the mind is material, but it's subtle. According to the Bhagavad Gita, the soul is covered by a gross body, which is the material elements, the gross material elements, and a subtle body, which is mind, intelligence, and ego. So, but it's actually the soul that is conscious. But in the conditioned state, that consciousness is expressed through the mind. Like, I'm wearing eyeglasses, you're wearing eyeglasses. The eyeglasses are not seeing. We are seeing through the eyeglasses. But if there's dust on our eyeglasses, we can't see clearly. So that's on the level of sight, the sense of sight, but the mind is, it's like the center of all the senses. So the consciousness, just like we see through the eyeglasses or through the eyeball isn't seeing, it's the consciousness. So similarly, we think and feel and desire through the mind. It's coming from the soul, but it's through the mind. And so it's like a mirror in the sense that, like, we don't see ourselves directly, we see through the mind. Like when we're wearing glasses, we're not seeing things directly, we're seeing through the lens of the eyeglass. And so if it's dirty, we won't see clearly. We won't see things as they are. All right, so I'm sure it's not needed in the least, but just to make you further appreciate the value of the prasad, I will cite one verse from the Bhagavad Gita, which says that people who prepare food for their own bodily satisfaction are eating sin. Yes. And that, even vegetarian, there is sin involved, even if you're vegetarian, if you don't offer the food to Krishna. But those who eat the remnants of food that is offered to Krishna, they are freed of all sins. Yeah, the other day I mentioned a story, I mean a true story, it's in the literature, that a tiger ate a sage in the forest, and the sage had just eaten some Krishna prasad. And then some hunter or something killed the tiger. And the tiger was liberated because by eating the saintly person who had eaten prasad, he got the credit for having eaten prasad. That's how powerful it can be. Of course, there was another story, Ramanujacharya. He was eating and he was like throwing his remnants into a lake. And his disciples were seeing maybe the birds from the lake or eating his remnants and getting liberated. You could see they were just going back home, back to Godhead. So the disciples said, you know, we're also eating your remnants every day, but we're not getting liberated and going back to Godhead. But they are. Why not us? And he said, because they don't commit any offenses. So, I mean, we've covered a lot in an introductory talk, but there's tremendous potency in all of these activities. There's no exaggeration at all. But the effects are weakened if we commit offenses. So that's something that you probably don't... Well, it's something that you have to learn about as time goes on. But in the beginning, you probably aren't committing any offenses because you don't know enough. So you're safe. And so now it's time for prasad. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.